call the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee to order. And we have an official quorum. First order of business, the minutes. We need a motion to approve the minutes. Representative McDonald or... Yeah, McDonald.
We could arm wrestle for it.
I know you both want to do it, but
next time... I've reviewed the minutes, and they're correct.
All right.
The only thing in my name, there's missing an E-I-E-I-O.
Okay. Any questions, comments? We'll move on. All those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. Representative Davids. Representative Davids, welcome to this committee. I don't see you here very often. We're glad to see you.
It's good to be seen, Mr. Chairman.
It is good. It's good. Chair moves House File 2083 to be referred to the Tax Committee. And Representative Davids, I guess it's all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 2083 allows an income tax subtraction for student loan principal payments. And this one has a bit more, which one has the more complicated formula, the next one or this one? This one basically allows being able to deduct principal payments from taxes. Mr. Chairman, members, there are a lot of students coming out of higher education institutions that have quite a tremendous student loan debt. And in the tax committee, we're trying to figure out a few ways to lessen the burden on those new graduates. So that's basically what this bill does. It allows subtraction with several criteria here, some income limits and so forth, for them to deduct their loan payment, whether it be a federal or state, at the federal, well, we don't do the federal, but at the state level. That's my bill.
Oh, okay.
And I'm here with all my friends.
Hi. What?
This is really left bill. Us. I appreciate
it. We were expecting a much longer presentation.
That's not why a lot of fanfare with me.
Yeah, okay. Members, any questions? This is a record. But wait till your next bill.
Yeah. Are we on?
Yes. 2083. Hearing no questions from the members, from the audience. Anyone want to testify for or against? It's amazing. I renew my motion then that House File 2083 be re-referred to the Tax Committee. And all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? You can see yourself now at the next committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
You're welcome. Stay where you are.
Yes, sir.
Okay. We move that House File 2084 be re-referred to the Tax Committee. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members, and thank you for moving House File 2084. This is an income tax credit for student loan payments, and it has to do with, depending on income and so forth, loan payments made during the year reduced by 10% of individuals' adjusted gross income in excess of $10,000. So there's a formula on this one also that the tax committee will give consideration to if it gets there. To lessen the burden of student loans for students that are coming out of our higher educational institutions.
Representative,
fine piece of legislation.
You have an amendment also, the A1?
Do I?
Is that your amendment?
Oh, is that mine? Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, okay.
That's a fine amendment too, Mr. Chairman.
It's very short. Very short.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I'd like to ask Nina Manzi from House Research to go through this in a little more detail. This one has more moving parts than the first one.
We should probably adopt the amendment.
That'd be wonderful.
Okay. Any discussion or questions? Representative Barrett?
I'll move the amendment.
Oh, you'll move the amendment. Oh, that's good. Representative Barrett moves the A1 amendment. Now we can proceed. Well, let's vote. Let's vote first. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Now we can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I'd like to turn over to Nina Manzi from House Research that actually understands the bill as amended.
Identify yourself, please, for the record.
Mr. Chair, Nina Manzi from the House Research Department. This bill allows a refundable income tax credit for both principal and interest payments on student loans of the taxpayer and spouse. There's a three-part test as to how much the individual would be able to claim as the credit. The first part is sort of the key part that ties it to income and makes it so that the higher your income, the smaller your credit. So what you do is you take the total amount of loan payments that you make during the year, and then you take your adjusted gross income and you subtract $10,000 from your adjusted gross income and take 10% of what's left, and you have to subtract that from your loan payments. So now that I said all those words, I'll give you an example that maybe will make it make a little more sense. So let's say, for instance, that you made $5,000 in loan payments during the year and that your adjusted gross income was $20,000. So first you take your $20,000 of adjusted gross income and you subtract $10,000 from it, because you're taking the amount in excess of $10,000, which will be $10,000. And then you take 10% of that $10,000, which is $1,000, and you subtract that from the loan payments that you made. So you made $5,000 in loan payments, you subtract $1,000 from that, and you'll be able to claim a credit of $4,000. Now, if we did another example where you still had the $5,000 of loan payments, but your income was $40,000, now you would have $30,000 over the $10,000 threshold. 10% of $30,000 is $3,000, so you would subtract $3,000 from your $5,000 of loan payments, and your credit would be $2,000. So you see, as your income increases, the amount of your credit will go down, and then when your income gets high enough so that that formula makes it equal to $5,000 in this example, you would no longer be eligible for a credit. The other two tests are that your credit is limited to your earnings for the year, both from self-employment and from wages, and your credit is also limited to the actual amount you paid in interest during the year, plus 10% of the original loan amount, which is a proxy for what your principal payment is. And this provision was put in to prevent someone from, for example, borrowing money from their family and friends to pay off all of their loan in the first year that this credit was in effect, and thereby getting a very large credit. So it's sort of to keep people from doing that and sort of gaming the system to get a big credit all at once. And that's how the formula works for this credit, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, my question is to Representative Davids, not to the...
All right. Any other questions of the testifier? Then I guess you'd go ahead and ask...
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, I'd heard you say, as tax chair, about the total amount in the tax committee for credits that you have up to this point. Could you repeat that today for this committee? What's the total amount of money you have in the tax committee that relate to tax credits in one way, shape, form, or another?
Mr. Chairman and Chair Pulaski, are you talking about all requests?
Yes, all requests, all bills requests.
I think I'm over about $9 billion.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Pulaski.
Davids, last night, what was the target in Ways and Means for the Tax Committee?
A mere $2 billion.
Representative Davids.
Mr. Chair.
Pulaski.
Representative Davids, did you say there's a gap?
Representative
Davids? Perhaps in what we you're will, going to be able to fund?
Mr. Chairman, Chair Pulaski, we will prioritize the best we can, and we'll get as much in that $2 billion as we possibly can.
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, I'd just like to illustrate to members that perhaps some of these bills may not be funded.
Representative Davids?
You don't need to say which ones right now. But
well, Pulaski, Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Pulaski. It probably depends on the authors or items. Possibly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, Pulaski. I think that's my point.
Representative Davids?
Mr. Chairman, Chair Pulaski, point well taken.
Having okay. a hard time keeping up here.
Can't keep Pulaski, up with your satellite.
Representative Davids?
Yeah, that's what we say.
That's okay.
Okay.
I think that we're done.
All right.
and Mr. Question? Chairman, to that
Representative
point,
Davids.
We have a wonderful tax committee, DFLers and Republicans, and I had a request probably about the first meeting of the tax committee. I wanted the tax committee to be a committee of ideas where we hear ideas, and I asked them not to think about money. And I know that sounds odd in the tax committee. Let's not think about money. Let's think about ideas. And then we'll come together as a committee, and we'll put our ideas together, and we'll get a wonderful tax bill out. And, of course, the tax bill has been named for this year, just so you know. Of course, 2011 was smoking hot, 2013 cold as ice. This is the Don't Stop Believing tax bill. Don't stop believing how I'm going to put $9 billion into two.
That sounds like a song. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair David, just a quick question. Does this bill relate to credits? Does it regardless of what school you go to or what state you might have attended in?
Maybe Ms. Banzi could come back. I think was it for attending related cost of attending school in Minnesota? No?
No.
Right here?
Do you need to call for help?
I'm going to phone a friend.
Okay.
Right, Mr. Chair, I think maybe Mr. Gehring could answer that question.
Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair and members, the definition of post-secondary educational institution in the bill provides for institutions both located in the state and receiving state student aid and also institutions located outside of the state. So it's both Minnesota schools and other schools.
Wow, that's very generous. Do we have a fiscal note on this yet? A revenue estimate?
Aren't you glad you came to this hearing, Mr.
Chair Pulaski? I think we just went to $10
billion. Mr.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davis, you know, I appreciate the fact that you're going to work on ideas. And I would hope that members would understand the practical side of this, though. There are limits to this body. There are limits to the amount that we can actually do. And the word that isn't heard often enough here, but should be, is no. Because no is coming.
Representative,
Mr. Chairman, Chair Pulaski, there will be a big no. You wouldn't believe how many friends I have right now, and I think in about a month there will be a few less.
Representative Isaacson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my goal wasn't to get between you two. I have no desire to be in that position at all. But I would like to say that I'm just wondering practically when we talk about, was the intent to do that outside of the state? And if so, was it to use it to attract people, or was that just kind of how the bill was written and maybe hadn't?
Well, that's, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Isaacson. That's why we have the hearings, because mm-hmm. That's one part that I will say that I didn't. I thought it was for Minnesota folks, but it's for everybody. Could that be a magnet to Minnesota? I suppose it could, if you have a lot of debt.
Well, yeah, I don't know if that's thank you. I don't know if that's necessarily a horrible thing to help provide that. I wasn't implying that as much as I was just curious how that works. And, you know, I think that any time we can provide that kind of support, my sun shines a little brighter, just a little down the table from over there. So I'm excited to see this bill. I think it's a good idea.
Any other questions of Representative Davids? Anyone in the audience? Okay, come on down.
Mr. Chairman,
your name, please.
Members of the committee, my name is Ryan Kennedy. I'm with the Minnesota Public Interest Research Group. We've actually been working on a similar bill for about 7 years now. I actually testified here first in 2009. Some familiar faces from Representative Rukavina's committee, some many new ones. I think everyone here understands the problem that we're trying to address, right? I mean, the student debt in Minnesota, we have the fourth highest percentage of students graduating with debt, and that debt amount is fifth highest in the country. I'm guessing Representatives Christensen and Whalen probably understand it better than most here. And this is, you know, since 1985, the cost of tuition has been rising at about four times the rate of inflation. And so what we're what we've pushed for with measures like this have been, kind of to Representative Isaacson's point, been to not only retain graduates of Minnesota colleges, but also attract other young people from across the country to come and work here in Minnesota. And with that, we know that from some of the past revenue estimates for similar bills, that basically this is going to pay for itself. And it's not sure if it's 3, 4, 5 years down the line, depending on how well it's used. But in terms of people staying here long term and actually contributing past, you know, past the extent of this refundable tax credit, because then they're going to stay here and be generating income taxes for the state, for many, for the rest of their careers. And so we think that this is something that not only has, you know, the benefit of relieving student loan debt, but also has the benefit of improving, you know, the state economy down the road as we, you know, attract more higher educated folks here. And kind of a bonus kicker is that a program like this is also has been proven to actually induce low and middle income students who currently forego higher education. You know, over 50% of college qualified student high school graduates that don't attend college, they're not attending because of cost. And so by kind of giving this program and saying, okay, if you graduate and if you stay in the state, or if you graduate and come here, then you will have some assistance in paying this off, has been proven as kind of a great inducing factor for young people who might otherwise look at higher education as unaffordable.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you. Any questions before we move on? Representative Davids, any final words?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members, for your questions. I'd really appreciate your support to re-refer this over to the Tax Committee.
Okay. Then the Chair will move House File 2084 as amended to be referred to the Tax Committee. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? There it goes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Representative O'Neill is next. Representative O'Neill, would you like to move your bill?
I would, Chair. Thank you. I'd like to move House File 420 to pass and re-refer to the Tax Committee.
And you have an amendment also, right?
I do, Chair. I have the A5. Okay. We can move that first. And I do have Nina Manns here, too, to explain some of the components of this if we get into the weeds too far.
Okay. The A5, can you give us a hint on what that's all about?
I can. It'll probably make more sense after I talk about the whole bill, but I can just explain it briefly. It further defines what an economic development region is, and after I explain the bill, you'll understand why we're talking about that. And it also further defines which standards from the occupation classifications qualify. So we have a lot of SOCs in here, and it further defines which SOCs qualify for this particular program. It also requires that individual regions or the individuals remain in the employed qualified field and in the qualified region in order to continue to qualify for the credit. So all of that will make more sense once I explain the bill.
Would you like to officially move the amendment?
Yes, I'd like to officially move the A5.
All right. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, now you can go ahead.
Okay, to the bill. So House File 420 creates a refundable tax credit for new employees who take a job in a STEM or a long-term care field, but they have to take it in an economic region with a high vacancy rate in that field. And if you pull out your packets, you're going to see this map of Minnesota with the 13 economic regions, and it will explain on this exactly which particular field of STEM and long-term care qualify in which region. It's a little bit complicated, so that's why you've got the chart in front of you. For example, if you look at the southeast corner of Minnesota, you have just C, so that would be just the sciences. Each region has a little bit different vacancy rate. The vacancy rate is also determined if it's 10% over the state average, and that is according to the State Job Vacancy Survey, which is compiled by DEED. So as you see here, this is information put together by DEED, and that would be on their website. And these are economic regions already in existence, and we're just applying the high vacancy rate fields to them. And then as far as what qualifies for the tax refundable tax credit, the credit is for 50% of the allowable tuition fees under the state grant program. So up to $5,000 for a four-year degree and up to $2,500 for a $5,000 for a four-year degree and $2,500 for a two-year degree. And you can claim it in the year that you gain employment. So as soon as you gain employment in one of these economic regions of high need, you can claim it in that year and then the following 4 years after that. So that's a real high overview of the bill.
You have some testifiers?
I do have two testifiers as well from the long-term care field. I don't think we've heard too much from long-term care in here, but the high need there. We know all about STEM, but we're going to have testifiers from long-term care.
Welcome, and begin by telling us your name and then who you represent, and then proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Toby Pearson, here today with Care Providers of Minnesota and the Long-Term Care Imperative.
And Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, I'm Carrie Thurlow with Leading Age Minnesota, also here on behalf of the Imperative.
When Representative O'Neill brought this to our attention, we thought this was a good idea and worthy of pursuing. At the Long-Term Care Imperative, we look at a lot of these things based on principles, and a couple of the principles that we would apply here are that it does help invest in caregiving and long-term care as a profession. We think that at times people have forgotten the importance of caregiving as a profession, and that it would help people more financially be able to afford going into caregiving in long-term care settings as a profession. We also feel that it would also incent more quality caregivers. One of the things that our members have challenges retaining and recruiting are quality caregivers to long-term care. Oftentimes we lose them to more acute care settings where they will be paid more to do very similar jobs.
Thurlow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I think if you've said in other committees, this is our first foray here to the Higher Ed Committee. We spent a lot of time talking with many of you this session about the shortage that we have in professional caregiving throughout the state of Minnesota. Our most recent survey indicates that we have, just in nursing homes alone, and we represent more than just nursing homes, but just in nursing homes alone today, we have over 2,500 open, vacant caregiving positions. We can't recruit enough of them. And as the age wave approaches, that shortage will be even more acute. The impact is huge, not just on providers, but also on the seniors that they serve. Quite honestly, if we don't have people in those positions, we can't take care of seniors. And that means in some cases in parts of the state, we are turning seniors away from open beds and referring them hundreds of miles away from their hometowns. We think that this bill will help us. We've introduced and think that this bill fits within our strategy to help think long-term about getting more people into the jobs that we have today and in the future and building careers. And we need to start addressing this today, creating opportunities so that people look at careers in long-term care as a viable opportunity that is both personally and financially rewarding. And so we do want to thank Representative O'Neill for bringing this forward as another thing that we can look at to help build that pipeline.
Thank you very much. Representative O'Neill, are there others that you...
That's all I have for testifiers. Okay. Chair, I would take questions.
Maybe before they step aside, other questions of the two testifiers? We really understand the problem. I mean, it is a huge problem. And we can't move fast enough, you know, to fix it. So, again, we have a question, Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative O'Neill, you and I sit on the same committee. I don't really understand why the STEM and the long term are put together, number one. And number two, what kind of long term care people are you targeting? Is it nurses? Is it PCAs? Is it all the above? And how do they qualify and for how long?
Who's here to answer? Representative O'Neill?
Thank you, Representative Rosenthal. Thank you, Chair. So the reason why the STEM and the long-term care is because those were deemed, as you know, when we talk about the pipeline project, which we'll talk about that again, are some of the highest needs in Minnesota. And so we started there. We certainly could expand elsewhere, but those are two areas that are just a tremendous need as far as employees. And to your question, actually, I'm going to bring Nina back up because we actually, in the amendment, we further defined what the healthcare SOCs were. And so, let's see here. Do you want to just talk to the SOC question?
Could you restate your name again?
Nina Manzi from the House Research Department. Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenthal, the way it would work is that an individual would have to have a degree, a 2 or a 4-year degree in science, technology, engineering, mathematics, or the field of medicine. And then they would have to take a position in a healthcare standard occupational classification with an employer whose primary business activity was providing long-term care. And it would have to be in one of these economic development regions that had a job vacancy rate for long-term care over 110% of the statewide job vacancy rate for long-term care. So it would include people who work in nursing homes and long-term care facilities who have 2 and 4-year degrees. Because of that, it probably would not include a lot of personal care. I think they're called attendants. It would include potentially, there's a listing I can send to you from the Bureau of Labor Statistics websites about the specific jobs that are inside of those standard occupational classification groups. It would be nurses, LPNs, all the way up through RNs. It would be therapists. So people who had some kind of a 2 or 4-year degree and were working in that field.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Manzi. Thank you for clearing that up. I understand what you're trying to do. I think it's a good thing. We need nurses and LPNs, but we also need, as you know, attendants in homes and in nursing homes. So you given any thought into how you might include them as well? I know
O'Neill.
You can't include everybody, but there is a glaring need for that.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Rosenthal. I'd be amenable to doing an amendment to include them. It gets a little tricky when you're talking about SOCs and which category. And Nina and I had talked at great length that, how do we get to that? We just have to figure out which codes and how we drill down to get to that. But that could be an amendment in the tax committee as I go there.
You Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative O'Neill. I'm assuming that this map is going to be updated on an annual basis. Wondering if the possibility might present itself that it would need to be updated more frequently than that. So if you could just clarify, please.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Pugh. It's because of the survey. So they do the vacancy, the job vacancy survey, and that's where the information is compiled. So unless they did the survey more often than that, then DEET can only do what they can do with the information available to them. And so we'd have to change that.
Okay. Any other questions? Anyone else in the audience that would like to testify? All right. Representative O'Neill, you have the last word, and you can also make the motion when you're ready.
Thank you. I think that we've talked at great length in here and other committees as well about tremendous need in long-term care and in the STEM fields. And this is, you know, one possible way we can get to that solution. Kind of deals with the student loan debt, and it also deals with the vacancy needs across the regions, especially in the real high-need areas, which that's the part of this I really do like. If you look at this, it does target it specifically to the highest-need areas in those particular fields. So I think this is a great approach, and I would love your support as we move forward with it to taxes. And with that, I'd like to renew my motion to move House File 420 to be referred to the Tax Committee as amended.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 420 is referred to the Tax Committee. We have one more. House File 1605. And this is my bill, as you can all see. This has a delete all amendment with it. This is the bonding request from the university and from Minsku, and with this amendment, it will be brought into one bill that we'll be presenting then to the Capital Investment Committee. So I'd like to offer the DE1 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is passed. So, we may have a testifier or two. Come on down and talk from the university and perhaps from Minsku as well. So, but we'll... this is all assuming that we're going to have a bonding bill. Okay. And you can identify yourself when you're ready, please.
Brian, can I bother you for a second? I'm not sure. I've got a mouse on this.
I believe this information is also in our packets. Is that
yes.
correct?
Yeah.
So.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Monique McKenzie, Director of Planning at the University of Minnesota.
And Brian Swanson with Finance at the University of Minnesota. We, Vice President Wheelock, who was scheduled to be here, had a conflict and was unable to come at the last minute, so she sends her regrets. What we have today for you is a subset of the slides that we presented back earlier in January, highlighting the projects in the capital request, and thought we'd just go through those very briefly as a reminder of the three primary components of the university's request this year.
All right.
And take questions. And first, I want to say thank you. We always like to say thank you again for the investments you've made in the past in the university and all the things that we've been able to accomplish because of those past investments. The university's request is summarized in three projects. The first is our higher education asset preservation and replacement. The second is the veterinary isolation facility replacement. And the third is the St. Paul greenhouse replacement, and you'll detect the replacement theme in our 2015 request. Higher education asset preservation replacement is a series of projects that follow the statutory guidelines provided by the legislature on how to spend the money. We spend those projects system-wide. We have a formula that allocates the funds out to each of the campuses based on a mixture of both facility condition and overall campus size. We have a complete listing of the projects available. I don't think we brought copies of it, but we can make that available if it isn't in your packet already. And and the general requirements that legislative statutes call out for HEPR. And with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. McKenzie.
Thank you, Brian. The replacement of the veterinary isolation facility is intended to support research that goes on in the College of Veterinary Medicine in infectious disease and disease in animal populations. It is the consists of replacing, through first demolition, two obsolete buildings that consume a disproportionate amount of energy and operations maintenance resources. We believe we can achieve a facility that meets our needs for a research environment suited to the challenges we are addressing currently. The project budget is $27 million. That is the total project value. And we are striving to achieve about a 30,000 square foot facility. The second facility on our request is the replacement of what we call the St. Paul Greenhouse. This is a highly specialized greenhouse. It houses six different plant collections representing six different biomes that are found on planet Earth. It's used for teaching. There's about 1,700 students a year that make use of that collection, again, for teaching purposes. It requires different conditions than a traditional greenhouse. We can achieve a project that will deliver to us what we require, which is about a 10,000 square foot greenhouse as part of the facilities already established in the plant growth facilities row. As I say, we can achieve this for a $4 million in state funding, total of a $6 million project cost. With that, a quick summary. Again, we have the two replacement projects. Both of these facilities are long past their useful life. Their consumption of energy and operations budgets have become a significant issue for us. With the addition of the HEPR, that consists of the university's capital request for this year. We are pleased to answer any questions of you.
All right. Members have questions? Very concise. Appreciate that. Looks like you did well. Yeah. Next. Are you ready to go?
I believe so, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we'll get
just look at the mouse here and there, and we'll see what happens. Yeah.
We're not pressed for time, so just... Ready? Okay. Again, start by identifying yourself and then move on.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Brian Yolitz. I serve as the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities for the Minnesota State Colleges and University System. I'd like to also introduce Vice Chancellor Laura King, the CFO for our system. She's here today along with Greg Ewig, who is our Director for Capital Development and does a lot of the legwork on these projects coordinating with our campuses. I'm here to thank the committee for the work supporting our faculty and staff and students that they serve. To endorse the bill before you, House File 1605, as reflects the priorities established by our board for the 2014 legislative session and then reaffirmed for the 2015 legislative session. Finally, provide a couple of details on the capital priorities of the projects for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. House File 1605 provides $198.5 million for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities to directly address capital investment priorities endorsed by our board for this legislative session. It provides $72.5 million for asset preservation through HEPR, funding for our campuses. It also funds major capital projects at 13 of our colleges and universities impacting 15 campuses. The entire program would be funded through State of Minnesota General Obligation Bonds totaling $156.5 million. And the balance from system resources totaling $42 million. Asset preservation through HEPR is our board's number one priority. It would fund 61 projects at 30 of our colleges and universities impacting 33 campuses. Roughly 47% of this work would address window and wall and roofs and doors, basically the exterior integrity of our facilities. About a third of the funding would go towards HVAC systems, including air conditioners, boilers, air handlers, and energy efficiency measures. And the balance would address electrical, plumbing infrastructure, and code compliance issues, and execute designs for future programs. As I mentioned, our capital priorities for 2015 were all in our 2014 request. Eight of the 2014 priorities were not funded last year, and they are reaffirmed by our board for this session. In relative order, funding for Minnesota West Community and Technical College would enable the replacement of an obsolete off-campus metal building with a safe, functional structure on the main Jackson campus for their power line technician program. It would also replace failing mechanical systems at our Canby campus with a geothermal system. In Rosemont, at the Dakota County Technical College, renovation work would make their transportation and technology programs more efficient and replace aging mechanical and electrical systems. Renovating the automotive and manufacturing spaces at Anoka Tech will provide better learning environments for those high-demand programs. In addition, at St. Paul College, work there follows through on design funded in 2012 to meet the growth in students at that college and provide spaces for high-demand programs in healthcare and sciences. At Century College in White Bear Lake and Matamidi, funding would transform obsolete tiered classroom spaces into more flexible and efficient learning areas. On the North Mankato campus of South Central College, investments would renovate spaces and enhance healthcare, STEM, and ag programs at that college. Facility renovations in Wadena and Fergus Falls campuses of Minnesota State Community and Technical College would create better spaces for student services and support programs at both locations. In addition, at East Grand Forks at the campus of Northland Community and Technical College, renovations will support science and radiology technology, a tech lab programs at that institution. Five projects were funded for design in 2014 and are now being readied for construction. Funding in 2015 would provide the replacement of Hague Sauer Hall at Bemidji State University with a smaller footprint and more flexible and efficient academic spaces at the university. In Rochester, the college will realign and renovate spaces for a host of academic programs and enhance student services on the main campus building there. In the Northeast Higher Education District at Hibbing Community and Technical or Community College, spaces will be aligned to more efficiently meet program needs and consolidate student support services. Funding for the Education Village at Winona State University renovates classrooms, labs, offices, and support areas to create an integrated learning laboratory for the full spectrum of teaching and lifelong learning in that region. And finally, at St. Cloud State University, construction will reclaim the Eastman Hall to serve students with improved areas for student support, healthcare, and counseling services, as well as human performance education and research. Mr. Chair, in closing, we enthusiastically support the program represented in House File 1605. It provides funding for the capital investment priorities of our colleges and universities. These projects are tremendously important to our students, to our communities we serve, and ensuring our students are prepared for their careers and work when they graduate. On behalf of our board, Chancellor Rosenstone, and our 410,000 students from every corner of the state, we thank you for your past support and your attention this afternoon. I can answer any questions the committee may have.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, this question is to you. We both sit on Ways and Means, and last night there was the budget resolution that was passed. Is there anything in the House Majority Budget Resolution that would prevent a bonding bill in 2015?
That would prevent
a bonding bill, and it would say there cannot be a bonding bill in 2015?
To my knowledge, no.
Mr. Chair, would the amount of the budget resolution that was put into the House Majority Budget last night support a bonding bill that could include the requests that are before us today?
I don't believe so.
And we seem to have a quandary.
You could call it that. But as we move on, I'm hopeful that certain things change.
Mr. Chair, I share your hope as a co-sponsor of this bill.
Okay. I think we all understand the importance of higher education, especially facilities, and so we know that these are our buildings, these are our facilities, and we need to take care of them. So, yeah, we'd be hopeful.
Thank you.
Any other questions of members, of testifiers, from the audience, any place, anyone? Oh, Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Never having served on the Higher Education Committee, I have a question that, you know, maybe everybody else knows the answer to, but I'm wondering if all of the buildings on the Minsku campuses have all been 100% funded by the state, including, or are there any other resources, whether it be from the private sector or any other public-private partnerships that have come together to invest in any particular assets on any of your campuses?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pugh, our system, for the most part, is a patchwork when the system came together from community colleges to technical college programs as well as universities. Since then, the majority of the funding for facilities for our academic space, which is about 22 million of the 28 million square feet, comes from capital bonding and such. The balance comes from the revenue fund, which is through fees for users, whether it's a residence life program, dormitories, food services, and student union fees. So that's kind of the breakout. We do on occasion have contributions from outside agencies, from private agencies. I think Mankato State University had the luxury of the Taylor Center, a donation from Taylor Foundation, or actually from the individual, if I'm not mistaken. So there has been occasions where we had contributions, but that is not where the majority of the funding comes from.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm curious about something for my own benefit here. So the $3.2 million for the Minnesota West Community and Technical College, the part that relates to the geothermal, is that repair or replacement of geothermal? And then do other campuses have geothermal? So I'll ask all my questions now just for the sake of time. Do all campuses have geothermal? And regarding the repair or replacement of this, are you planning on saving some money on your heating bills?
Mr. Yolitz?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barrett, indeed. This is one of the campuses where we will... At the Canby campus, we're replacing the existing mechanical system with geothermal, but it's not replacing an existing geothermal system. We do have several other campuses, particularly the Red Wing campus of Southeast Technical College, has a geothermal. It's more of a demonstrator kind of system for the education program there, the tech program. But back to Canby, we do expect to see some savings once the project is put in place on our energy bills.
Representative Pulaski.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is to Representative Pugh's comment and also to Mr. Yolitz. You know, he mentioned the Taylor Center. There are other campuses that have funded buildings in part through private donation. Winona State's Wellness Center was one-third private donation, one-third student fee. It's not in your request. It's already been built. Mm-hmm. And one-third state funding. There have been experiments inside Minsku to do exactly what you said, to try to get private support for buildings to make sure that we don't have to rely totally on the state. So I agree with you. There are not as many as there should be, but it has been done. By the way, oftentimes with a level of resistance from the central office. Unless it's been built and completed, then it's embraced and enhanced and congratulated.
End of comment?
I could go on, but I won't.
Oh, okay. Any other questions from the members? Otherwise, Mr. Yolitz, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, I think we're ready to kind of finish our business for the day. Unless there's other questions, I renew my motion that House File 1605 be referred to the Capital Investment Committee as amended. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passed. Motion prevails. I wish you all a good vacation. I mean, we'll see you tomorrow, but this is our last meeting until after vacation. So with that, we're adjourned.